Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Analytics Neat. I'm your host, Bill Bruno. For those of you that might be new here, Analytics Neat is a weekly podcast. It comes out every Monday. I tend to cover media, marketing, analytics, technology, and data, and I do it in a short format to try to make it something easy for you to digest and then move on with your day. I also love interacting with all of you, so you can reach out to me directly on Twitter, at Bill Bruno, using the hashtag AnalyticsNeat. You can also give the podcast a follow, at AnalyticsNeat on Twitter as well. So if you have any ideas, topics, questions, concerns, hit me up, and I'd love to chat. And whether you're an avid listener of the podcast or you're new here and you like what you happen to be hearing, then please rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you prefer. If I'm not on a platform that you prefer to listen to, let me know and we'll try to figure that one out too. All right, so welcome back. Hope everybody had a fantastic weekend or as good of a weekend as you could. I hope everybody stayed safe. Hope you, yes, you guessed it, wore a damn mask. Even if you've been fortunate enough to receive one of those vaccines, please still continue to wear a damn mask. Spent the weekend with my sister and mom and nephews, and that's kind of been our bubble, if you will, and just helping mom kind of clean out some stuff in the house, which was really funny to go through and dig through things that went as far back as my preschool days and sort through all of the paperwork and the homework and things that I designed, and realizing that I was a terrible colorer for a large part of my early childhood. But thanks to my parents for making me think that I was actually good at it. And there were obviously some other things that happened over the weekend in the sporting realm, but I promised a few neaters that I would not mention it, as their teams did not play in that game. So instead, Mackenzie and I made a smorgasbord of food for two people, and that will be the cheat day for my probably next 3 weeks, given everything that we ate yesterday. And that brings us to this week's undercard. Now, this week's undercard is brought to you by the Beef Jerky Influencer, at Beef Jerky Influencer on Instagram. Very, very close friend of mine has started to share his knowledge and understanding and passion for beef jerky. I have been in many road trips with this individual. I've been to several WrestleManias and Royal Rumbles and other events with this individual, and he always brings beef jerky. My birthday just passed a few weeks ago, and he brought some fantastic jerky that lasted about 2 days. So if you're interested in knowing the latest and greatest from traditional grocery stores to things that he finds along the way and more niche vendors, I highly urge you to follow at Beef Jerky Influencer on Instagram. And Dan, because I know you listen, first ads for you, bud. And so with that, let's go ahead and jump into the undercard. The first topic that popped up actually kind of surprised me, to be perfectly honest, because it's a conversation that probably came out, I'm going to say 4 or 5 years ago, when I was at Ubiquity and we were running things with the Association of National Advertisers and doing the various audit best practices and transparency studies. We had a division of Ubiquity called Firm Decisions, and they were the global leader at the time in financial audits. Now, what is a financial audit? It's following the money, right? It's reconciling your accounts with agencies. It's following the money to make sure that any money that wasn't used or that's owed back to you came your way, following things for rebates and anything else that might be not above board or less transparent, and helping organizations get the money back or brands get money back for what they're deserved, and auditing the agency's books as they manage the entire book of media and advertising business for that particular advertiser. And they were quite good at that. That's why they were a large component of the transparency study at the time. Now, a lot of those individuals have moved on to different organizations and are doing great things in the industry as well. But this one topic that always came up still seems to be there. It was an article that I saw shared on LinkedIn about a week ago, and it was from a procurement perspective. Now, ProcureCon, as an example, was one of the big conferences that we always went to in the US and around the globe, because it was where all the global procurement leaders would come together, share stories, learn how to better manage media, how to better select suppliers, so on and so forth. It was actually a great time. You might think procurement conference and think to yourself, my God, how would you and why would you want to subject yourself to that? But it was actually a fantastic conference, always a lot of fun. And there's this clause in a lot of agency contracts with brands that historically has tried to limit who a brand can bring in to audit an agency. And it was always called the Big Four clause. Now, the Big Four being PwC, Deloitte, KPMG, and Ernst & Young, or EY. And whenever we were doing kind of a review of a brand's relationships with their agencies, this clause was always a problem that we would highlight. And it wasn't just a problem because it's limiting who you can select to audit you, which there's no reason for that. It also wasn't just a concern because at the end of the day, you've got four firms you could pick from in that big four bucket. One of them at a minimum will be conflicted for some relationship reason. So you're at a minimum down to three that you can pick from. And so when you look at it from that perspective, that's not great either. But it's also an issue because these big four are not media experts. And the way media buying is done and the non-transparent practices that have been identified over the years were not things that a novice who just looks at spreadsheets or just audits the books and looks for things to balance are going to find. So there's an expertise there, and there's a reason that agencies pushed for this clause was to protect some of the practices that they knew would require a level of expertise and people who were familiar with how those businesses operated. So I was really shocked that this was still even a conversation, that brands were still running into this, that they were even still accepting these clauses. And so from my perspective, this is something that just needs to go away. So I just wanted to address it. It was a great article, but it rehashed a lot of the things that we had already known for years. And this to me is another example of the advertising sector not changing enough over a period of time. I mean, 5, 6, 7 years is a really long time to not look at something that everyone can collectively agree is a problem and find a way around it. So if you have that clause in your agency contracts, chances are you don't have the visibility that you need, and you're restricting your business way too much from a legal perspective and need to look to get that rectified. And so the final topic on this week's undercard is Group M. Now, I'm saying this tongue in cheek because I had a lot of interactions with Group M. There are some fantastic people that work there. But if you were to talk about data transparency, you look at the MID platform and everything else that they've built. I mean, they were kind of in the forefront of aggregating a bunch of digital data from their customers, so on and so forth, allegedly, please don't sue me. But Group M released last week what they're calling the Data Ethics Compass. Now, that just made me laugh out loud when I read it, but I was intrigued enough to read more, and I thought that I would share with you what this is. So apparently, this is a global tool. Now, right out of the gate, I question that because what we saw all the time was what happened in the US or in Europe, so drastically different. Media buying is done very differently. The data sets are identified differently, so on and so forth. But anyways, let's take it at face value. Apparently, Group M has partnered with Unilever to roll something out globally as a tool that helps marketers better understand if a data set is not just legal, but also morally ethical to use. So the focus was around advertising targeting, and you're using all these different data sets potentially to better target individuals. You have information about people. Where did that come from? Is it ethical to use it? Is it legal to use it? So on and so forth. Now, they've labeled Unilever as an alpha tester of the tool. So to me, that means it's not really in production. They're just going to vet this against Unilever, who obviously spends quite a bit of money on advertising. They were a customer of ours at Ubiquiti while I was there. Fantastic relationship in our audit, media auditing and best practices services that we offered there. And Unilever is going to provide a bunch of feedback. And the agency is Mindshare that's working on this. And Mindshare apparently began development on the tool initially, and they're trying to figure out how to best operationalize this. Because in the media space, because of how different things are, if you try to build one tool that sort of fits them all, so to speak, you know, then it can be a bit of a challenge. So I'm sure that they're trying to figure out what the best fit is that would work to 80% of their requirements, let's say. And then you can have about 20% customization, because if you don't standardize it in the media industry, you end up with a lot of spreadsheets. You end up with a lot of data and a lot of spreadsheets, and that results in a lot of opportunity for error. Now, everything that you could find on this has honestly sounded like a lot of jargon talking about ethics principles, and if you change the inputs, it changed the analysis, and they needed something that could be prescriptive and flow across different use cases and blah, blah, blah. I mean, as I read everything, my head was spinning saying, okay, obviously you've been through a lot of PR training and you're trying to not divulge everything that you're doing. You don't want people to copy it, but you wanted to put a flag in the ground to say we care about ethics. I get it. So overall, everything that I read made it sound like this is really manual at this point, but that the intent was there if the right people govern this. And I put a big if on that because as I was reading, one of the goals that they said was that in the iteration, agencies can fill out the information in the platform for that client's vertical to verify how the data was collected, where the data is coming from, and that then it would indicate
you know, what it says, and it would provide a risk score of some kind. And Group M's looking to make efficiencies in the process, right, for these decisions. So they were basically saying that this would allow agencies to make ethical decisions without needing to report back to data privacy experts at the holding company level. Now, from my perspective, massive potential problem here. There's already a breakdown in the process because who's governing how these things are identified, who's actually ensuring that these are ethical data sets and that they're legally compliant and that they're in line with the privacy perspectives and legislation in that region of the world, whatever that region may be, and how quickly will that fall out of date, and how quickly will we end up in a situation again where you've got data sets that are being used for lookalike modelings and have been redone 7, 8, 9 times with data that's 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. So overall, I think it's a great idea. It's definitely things that need to be done. Leave it to WPP and Group M to try to put the first stake in the ground, so to speak, around this and launch a tool. Sounds like they got a long way to go, but Unilever will help guide it. And hopefully they'll guide it from a perspective of creating the utmost amount of transparency possible. And so that wraps up this week's undercard. We'll go ahead and jump into the main event. A lot of times I pick these main events based upon conversations that I'm having either from a networking perspective or professionally. And there's been a topic that's been coming up quite a bit, and it's been around identity. And I know we've talked a bit about identity at a high level in the past. We've talked a little bit about identity graphs, identity verification. We've talked about Apple ITP and some of the changes that are influencing or impacting in a negative way the ability for third-party solutions to identify and persist individuals and maintain a view of an anonymous individual. But conversations I've been in recently have been sort of incorrectly assuming what you can and can't do with certain technologies as it pertains to identity. So I guess call it a bit of an identity series. They won't necessarily be week after week, but I'll be plugging into content every once in a while, a different view into a different technology's capabilities around identity or different industry concepts around identity and how those apply against a broader set of technologies. So for this one, I thought I would do a bit of a deep dive into the user ID feature as the core component of identity for Google Analytics 4. It's come up quite a bit in various inquiries, and I've honestly just heard a lot of inaccurate positions around what you can and can't do from a customer-centric perspective with Google Analytics. And there's obviously a lot of buzz around Google Analytics 4, and before I jump into this, I just want to make it really clear. This is focused on identity. I think Google Analytics is a fantastic web analytics platform, and I think that's all it is. I think it's got fantastic reporting. I think it's easy to use. I think it's got some fun things to do from a campaign perspective. There's some fun sandboxes in there. So if you're a marketing analyst and you're looking at the web and you only care about the web and you're just trying to improve the user experience in those and you don't really care who the person is, it's more about the experience, then I think a web analytics tool like a Google or an Adobe Analytics makes a whole lot of sense. I just want to make that clear because I know sometimes I can come across as negative, but really the negativity for me is when you try to take a solution that does one thing and try to make it do another thing that it wasn't designed for. Google Analytics has this user ID, right? And there's a lot of misconceptions around this user ID field. And I just want to be really clear. When I was at Stratagent and Ubiquity, partnered with Google Analytics from the day it launched, we actually, at Stratagent, we designed the initial sort of starter package deployments that Google used and also sold with other partners other than just Stratagent to get people stood up on the initial version of Google Analytics when that went live. Now, when Google launched what was back then Google Analytics Premium and now is Google Analytics 360, they've tried to add more features and functionality around that, and one of those things was the user ID. But what's always misconstrued in the industry is what you can do with that user ID field and what you can't do and what the limitations of those IDs are. Because in the contracts that organizations sign with Google, they're very explicit that you're not to put personally identifiable information or private health information, so PII or PHI, is not supposed to go into those systems. So naturally, the question you should be asking yourself right now is, well, then what can I put in the user ID field? Well, to implement user ID, now I'm going to bring you a bunch of stuff here through the rest of this podcast that's coming directly from Google's documentation and helping you better understand it. But Google puts a caveat on everything around the user ID, and it says you must be able to generate your own unique IDs. You have to consistently assign that ID to individuals. And these, you have to include these IDs wherever you send data to analytics. So every time you send data, that user ID, if it's available, has to be sent or it loses the picture. Now here's the kicker. The user ID value needs to be unique, it needs to be persistent, and it needs to be non-personally identifiable string identifier that represents a user or signed in account across devices. If a user ID is an email address, as an example in your login process, that's personally identifiable and you shouldn't be using this. And I know you're saying, well, everybody does. Well, as my mom and dad would say, if everybody jumped off a bridge, would you jump too? And I think from this perspective, I watched a couple clients that actually got caught capturing personally identifiable information in Google Analytics, and they were forced to remove data. You know, Google does take this very seriously. So if your login IDs are email addresses or in any way, shape, or form are identifiable to an individual, then you're not able to share that. And you might say, well, what if I send it hashed? Technically, sending it hashed in or in some sort of encryption only works if it takes three different, it's the rule of three, the three data sets to sort of decrypt it and understand who that individual is, right? If it requires more than three or more data sets, then you're probably good. But you can only send that one ID. And that ID needs to be sent every time you send data to analytics. So once someone logs in and provides that ID, whatever that is, if you're not sending that to Google Analytics each step of the way and tagging for that and including that appropriately, then you're going to lose that complete picture because the logic isn't there to stitch it together. So it's really two things that I want to cover today. One is that understanding the limitations of the user ID, understanding what it can and can't be, and then hopefully understanding what I mean when I say that Google Analytics is not a customer-centric solution. It's a web analytics tool with sessionized data that allows you to do some fun things to try to better understand cross-device interactions, but it's not holistic, it's not granular enough, and it requires a lot of maintenance, a lot of tagging, and a lot of configuration to do some of these advanced concepts that frankly aren't even a complete picture in the first place once you spend all that time and money. And just to hit this point home, when you set up user ID, if you enable that into one of your Google Analytics properties, it takes you to accept the Analytics SDK and user ID feature policy. Now, I don't know how many of you have read that. I went and read it for you because it's one of those things that shows up when you always hit I agree when you're installing software, right? And you kind of just jump through it and you don't really pay attention to the nitty gritty. But there are two things in here. Now I'm going to go ahead and read these word for word. The first is that you must not upload any data that allows Google to personally identify an individual, such as names, social security numbers, email addresses, or any similar data, or data that permanently identifies a particular device, such as a unique device identifier, if such an identifier cannot be reset. They then go on to say that you must not session stitch authenticated and unauthenticated sessions of your end users unless they have consented to such activity and such merger is allowed under applicable laws and regulations. Now, as you go through just overall, right, what does this mean? This is basically highlighting that Google does not want any information about any individual. Now, that is within Google Analytics, and that's the user ID feature policy, and they don't want any of that in there because remember that in certain situations, if you enable it or you tick the box, you can start to share data with other organizations in an anonymous way. And Google does not want to be a controller or a processor of personally identifiable information. It's similar on the Google Cloud side, although you can obviously upload a lot of first-party information into BigQuery and do it that way, but having a common connector is typically the challenge. Doing it in real time is a huge challenge, and so a lot of organizations build these sandboxes, but you're not really going to activate that data beyond analyzing it in applications or visualizing it in Data Studio or things of that nature. They also don't want you stitching these sessions together unless you have the clear okay to do so. And that's another key thing that you have to keep in mind because that means out of the box, you can't just start bringing all this data together unless you've asked for that consent, accepted that consent, and made it clear how you're going to use it. Now, this user ID is not set by analytics. It's not something that Google takes responsibility for. It's basically an empty variable, a name value pair where you have to give it the value if you chose to do it after accepting these policies. And another key point about this is that data collection begins after the implementation. Now, you can read all about these things in the caveats that Google provides in their documentation. But in essence, if you haven't set the user ID and I'm in an existing session or I've had previous sessions where I come anonymously, you can't retroactively stitch those together. So you can't reprocess the data and say, okay, now that I know it's Bill and Bill had all these other sessions that were on the same device, you can't just reprocess that. You can't go back in time. So there's no ability to take this user ID and retroactively stitch it and use this to inform an identity graph. It's from that point forward. And it's only from that point forward, provided you continue to persist and present that user ID into the Google Analytics data model that they provide behind their walls, so that the processing can work accordingly. It's also important to remember that you can implement a user ID feature on any property, but any data collected in one property can't be shared or mixed with data in another property. So as you start to look at different domains or subdomains or properties across your business, the silo situation exists. So then what are you left with doing? Well, you're left with doing what everyone has been struggling to do for years with web analytics or just digital data in general. It's the reason why the Harvard Business Review said that in their finding, less than 1% of organizations' unstructured data were used to drive decisions. And the reason is because you're going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars and months of effort trying to bring this data together in a meaningful way to activate for the customer. By the time you've done that, from a latency perspective, that customer's needs or wants or desires have changed. And that's really the kicker for all of this, right? Is that from a Google Analytics perspective and the way that this user ID feature works is nice to try to get some sort of picture of individuals, and you can bring that data into BigQuery and you can have some fun with it. But it is not a centric, customer-centric solution. It is a session solution that captures some data along the way that allows you to try to do your best to understand the individual, as long as you're not violating all of these massive policies that Google has put in place. Now, it's also important to note that when Analytics collects a user ID, it only associates the events within the same session. So if you collect a bunch of events and then the user ID is collected mid-session, there's no way to kind of go back. That works within the session as well. You know, no further association is made between subsequent events and the user ID that was previously collected. You have to continue to collect the user ID to maintain the association sort of ongoing in subsequent events. So in that case, you're probably building a data layer. The minute a user ID field is filled, you're constantly making sure that that is sent with every piece of information to Google Analytics, because if it's not sent on one of the communications with Google servers, then that piece of information is not going to be associated. So it's extremely fragile. It is not a sort of golden key or golden record within Google Analytics. It's a reporting feature that is sort of masked as user ID. It's poorly named. It really should just be a potential key that you could use downstream if you so choose. But with all these caveats, it makes it really difficult to sit here and say that Google Analytics is a customer-centric solution. It is a session-based solution that offers some interesting features and functionality. It has great reporting and sandboxes and campaign analysis and all these pretty reports and things that are necessary, but it is not something that you can retrofit into a customer-centric solution. And that's why most organizations then try to do that on the back end in BigQuery or in the Google Cloud platform, uploading a bunch of first-party data. But that in and of itself is also an issue, because with your organization security and privacy policies, how much of that data can you actually upload? How are you going to tie it to this fabricated user ID? Is it going to be easy to do? How quickly can you make it happen? And how much time are you going to spend bringing this data together when maybe there might be a better way to do it? So that's the first step in our identity series. I'm going to bring out these deep dives into several technologies or industry issues in the coming months. We won't do them all in a row. I'm just going to kind of scatter them throughout in the upcoming weeks and months. Hope that was enjoyable. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to go ahead and wrap up this week's episode. We'll be back again next Monday with another new episode. Please send any thoughts, questions, comments, or concerns my way. I love to chat with all the neaters out there. And if there's a technology that you'd like a deeper dive on the identity piece, send that my way as well, and we'll work that in an upcoming episode. We'll be back again next Monday with another new episode. And until then, stay safe and wear a damn mask, folks.